Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Don't sweat the technique. The Killer Bees are broadcasting live from inside the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9. Now back to Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Time now for our weekly conversation with the voice of the Astros, Todd Kallas. Our conversation presented by Texas Star Grill Shop and Gulf Coast Chevy, Buick, GMC, and Angleton. Start shopping for your new vehicle at LanceZCars.com. TK, how cool is it to go back to Philadelphia, stand next to the statue of your father, Harry Kallas, one of the all-time greats that has ever done it? What was that trip like for you?
That was as cool as it gets, and I think the older I get, the more I appreciate it. And so I actually spent an extra day in Philly last night. That's why Esh was filling in, and got back to Houston today, actually late last night into the early hour mornings this morning, and then tonight off as well. So it was great. I got to see a lot of people I hadn't seen in a while. We hadn't been there in the regular season since 2017. When we were there in the World Series, my wife and I were kind of running around. World Series a little different, but this was more of a setting where I could catch up with a bunch of people. So had a great 4 days in Philly, and I look forward to going back there in a couple of years.
Well, TK, before we get into anything with the game, because I don't know how much, obviously you probably are trying to play catch-up, but just your thoughts on the fact that the Astros have hit it big after the trade deadline on two guys that basically everybody gave up on. The fact that you add Gamble and from the get-go, he suddenly is hitting over 300, he's getting timely hits, he's playing defense, and now you add Jason Hayward, and in game one, an extra base hit, two RBIs. We all know he seems like such a good guy, but how could anybody predict that these guys would be such good fits and are helping you so much in the outfield?
Yeah, how about Jason Hayward just jumping in there with the two RBIs to kick off last night's game? That was brilliant. Gamble's been unbelievable. I hit in every start so far. So, yeah, I mean, the truth be told, the Astros were really struggling in the corner outfield spot. They have not had much production in any of their three outfield spots since Kyle Tucker went down. Last I looked, their OPS since the Tucker injury was in 30th place out of 30 teams in the major leagues in the outfield since June 3rd when Tucker got hurt. So, Dana Brown's gotten aggressive. His crew, they've been looking for guys that have been available, and Gamble and Hayward have seemed to be nice fits. They both hit left-handed, so I'd imagine you'll see them starting a lot against right-hand pitching, and so far so good. And those guys are veterans. They shouldn't be fazed too much down the stretch when the importance of winning your division becomes a little bit pressurized.
Todd Kallas joining us on the HR&P guest line. Dana Brown GMing his tail off, and then Joe Espada managing his tail off. You know, the pitching matchups each and every game late in the game, seventh, eighth innings. You know, you have the big three, but then on the offensive side of things, because you have some right-handed options, you have some left-handed options. Mentioned Gamble and Hayward. Espada's not very bashful going with the bench pretty early in games, and he's doing the best he can with kind of this hodgepodge bench that he's got right now.
Yeah, he matched up again yesterday when they brought in the lefty out of the pen, and I imagine he's going to be doing that for the next 4 weeks and 2 days as well after today. So, he's got certain guys in the lineup, obviously the top four or five guys that are not going to get pinch hit for, but once he gets 6 through 9, he's looking for the most advantageous matchup you can find. So, credit to Joe, credit to Dana, all hands on deck right now. This team, I know fans hate when guys get days off, but this team's been pushed so hard after that really bad start. 12-24 is a tough hole to dig yourself out of. So these guys have had to have off days. And Yiner getting his first one since June 12th, I believe, the other day was much needed. Not sure how many off days they're going to get until this division settled. So it's going to be a big push to the finish line. I know a lot of guys are looking forward to that off day Tuesday in Cincinnati. But like to go back to your original question, credit to Joe. Credit to Dana being aggressive, trying to get this thing across the finish line.
Well, you beat me to it, Todd, because I was going to say, is there anything to worry about in that Bregman is not in the lineup tonight? Because we didn't know if he'd play third base again. Then he's been a Warrior again, playing multiple games in a row there and playing well. He got tossed last night, which I thought he didn't deserve. But at the same time, I personally was a little surprised that he wasn't in the lineup tonight. Anything to think about there, or is just another just a chance to give him a break?
I think on Bregman's side, you can kind of think that there's a possibility that his elbow didn't feel 100% today. Joe Espada checks with him every morning, and if he feels good to go in the DH spot as opposed to in the field, he'll tell Joe. Bregman and Joe and Espada have such a good relationship that they're going to be perfectly honest with each other. Bregman's going to want to go every day, but he's smart enough to know that if he pushes it too much after playing, you know, half dozen games in a row or seven, whatever it was, at third base, maybe he just needed a breather today, and maybe that'll lead into a breather again on Tuesday. Now, if he goes back-to-back days tomorrow without playing, then we have more of a story. But hopefully it's just that one day off where it didn't feel great coming off yesterday, and should be back in there tomorrow, let's hope.
How does this top two in the Astros rotation stack up against other top twos in baseball? Hunter Brown's been brilliant for a while now. Framber Valdez is Mr. Consistency all of a sudden. Where do Framber and Hunter stack up against the top twos in rotations around the league?
Yeah, I love what I've seen out of the entire starting rotation. There's going to be somebody who's really well-deserving of a postseason start if the Astros win the division, that's not going to get a start. And I don't know who that's going to be right now. I mean, you imagine the two guys you're talking about are going to be at the top. Then JV is a first ballot Hall of Famer, so he's going to be in the mix. And I think Ronel Blanco is kind of the likeliest candidate that's going to go to the bullpen just because he is going to be way over his previous career high set last year in innings pitched. So I imagine of the three guys still out there, Kikuchi, Blanco, and Eric Geddy, he would be the easiest to send to the bullpen. And then it's going to be a tough call. You might not need a four starter in that first round or the second round, but you certainly would by the time you get to the CS if the Astros get there 8 years in a row. And I don't want to be the one telling Spencer Eric Geddy he's not going to get a start in the playoffs, because right now he has been, I mean, I feel as good with Spencer as I do with Hunter or Framber or JV, or you say, for that matter. So it's going to be a really tough call, and it's a good problem to have. But, yeah, I would say the Framber-Hunter combination with those, I would say this is a deeper rotation, maybe other than the Mariners, but in the month of August, the Astros have outpitched the Mariners, so I would say this is as deep a rotation as anybody in baseball, including the Mariners here for the past month.
Todd, kind of similarly, but getting to the bullpen, you get Presley back last night. It seems like you've got a lot of different options again. I love Neris. I was really happy they brought him back. It seems like right away Joe Espada felt comfortable using him in kind of that role that was previously designated for like a Montero or then a Taylor Scott, to where he could be your sixth inning guy. They got a lot of confidence in him. Taylor Scott's been used a lot. How do you see them using Neris going forward now when you've got those three guys solidified at the back end of your bullpen?
Yeah, I think you can slide him 6, 7, 8, or 9. I don't think there's going to be any issue if for some reason Hader and Presley are down for a night, or Hader, Abreu, and Presley are down for a night, then you could see Neris closing a game. I think they would be fine with that. So, but you could also see him as early as the sixth inning. He could get the final out in the sixth and then pitch the seventh. He already did an inning in the third, his first outing in Baltimore. So I like his role very similar to the Taylor Scott role. And now all of a sudden you've got five guys that you're really, really comfortable with. Not that you aren't comfortable with the Caleb Orts and the rest of the guys that are in the back end of that bullpen, but I think you've got five guys that you would love any time 7 through 9 that you can count on. So it's as deep as the bullpen has been all year long. I really am excited on this pitching staff from 1 to 13. It's just in its best place that they've been all season long and at the right time going down the stretch.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and then hopefully the offense gets healthy. Kyle Tucker apparently could play as soon as next week, according to Brian McTaggart. We'll discuss that a little bit later, being joined by Todd Callis on the HRNP guest line. When Yordan gets in those grooves where he gets hot, like he did in Game 3 against Philly, where he hit three home runs, where it seems like he can hit any pitch out, how much fun is that from your view? I imagine that you think every swing he takes, he's going to do damage to the baseball and leave the yard.
That's what it feels like. He's a different world. Altuve has said it numerous times, and I would concur. He is the best hitter
that Altuve has seen. He's the best hitter that I've had a chance to see on a regular basis in my 32 years. He's just incredible with his power and his smart combination. Like, he is really a smart hitter. He doesn't leave the zone very often, and he'll go through slumps where he leaves the zone, but for the most part, he's not going to leave the zone. He'll take his walks. He sometimes, you know, if there's one, if I had to be a nitpicker and find one flaw, sometimes he guesses a little too much, but that's also one of the reasons why he's able to hit changeups out as much as he does, because a lot of times he guesses right. He's super intelligent at the plate. He's incredibly strong, and he's a great overall hitter. But when he gets on those rolls, I don't know why it doesn't happen here at home. I saw him laughing to himself after he hit that ball to the wall last night. I don't know if he was chuckling because he thought it would have been out in another stadium and it wasn't here, or he's just chuckling because he knows he doesn't have any good luck so far this season at Minute Maid Park and all his luck has been on the road. But, yeah, Jordan's the best. I love calling his games, and I'm glad that I've been able to call as much of his career that I have.
TK, a little surprised just in the defense over the last couple of weeks, and I know that it's been kind of a musical chairs effort with the young guys getting in with Bregman's elbow, but you've seen a couple of gaps from obviously Singleton at first, Pena at short. Has it surprised you because they've always been so hyper-focused on defense, and we were talking about it. Is there anything really that you can do differently because of the fact that it's just, you know, fundamental stuff?
The Pena's part is really surprising to me. I've never seen Jeremy struggle this much for this long of a time since his rookie year. So, yeah, that part's been a surprise. The other errors on the infield, some of it can be chalked up to inexperience. You've got Wickham learning third at the big league level. You've got DeZenzo learning first at the big league level. You've got guys rolling into that first base spot on the regular. It's not for lack of effort. Those guys are taking ground balls. Omar Lopez is working out his infield more than he probably has going back to his early days of his minor league coaching career. Like, he is grinding out there. They just don't really have, to be perfectly frank, a very good defensive first baseman, no matter who they roll out there. So that's going to be part of the issue. Part of the issue is inexperience. The Jeremy Pena part is the biggest surprise. I mean, this is a guy that was the best shortstop his rookie year, and now, unfortunately, he has not played up to that Gold Glove standard this season, and that has been, of all the errors they've committed, the one that's been surprising.
TK, we always appreciate the time. Enjoy these couple of days off, and we look forward to hearing you in the booth again.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you next Friday. Thanks.
Todd Callis, voice of the Astros, Texas Star Grill Shop, Gulf Coast Chevy, Buick, GMC, and Angleton. Start shopping for your new vehicle at LanceZCars.com. Yeah, so Kyle Tucker provided a long update on his condition, says Brian McTaggart, and said it's an option to play in Cincinnati next week. They play Monday, off day, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in Cincy. But most likely he'll return next homestand. So it's in play. He returns next week. Somebody asked, no rehab assignment. McTaggart says it's possible, but Tucker prefers not to have one.
Huh.
So
that's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine not wanting to go down to Oklahoma City. No offense to anybody. You know, have to slum it with the Spacers and OKC. So I can understand not wanting to do that, but to be back on the team next week, that seems a little bit, that seems far-fetched. To be there. But if they said next homestand, you're looking at September 6th.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, as much as, and I know you've critiqued the videos that we've seen on social media, and I'm in agreement with you, they didn't look great in the past. I mean, last night's videos that were coming out from the guys that were at the stadium were very, very encouraging. It looked like he could get to the full sprint. It looked like, you know, the plays he was making in the outfield, the throws he was making, looked more like the real Kyle Tucker. They mentioned that he has a different shin protector on. He's taking live batting practice again today. And maybe the fact that he's been taking a lot of live batting practice off of some of the Astros pitchers kind of eliminates the need for him to get, you know, too many reps or any kind of rehab stints. But you obviously you're a better team with Kyle Tucker in the lineup. The sooner the better, assuming that he's healthy, that's the main concern. But you'd love to have him whenever you can be, you know, get to the thumbs up that he's ready to go.
Yeah, that's interesting. Good news. It is good news. I mean, sounds like worst case scenario, he could be back with the Astros a week from today. Okay, I like that. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Who do you think is the Texans' X factor this year? Who will define the season for the Texans. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Yeah, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville is the best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. He does phenomenal work. He does PRP. You've heard it with athletes when it comes to their elbows, with their knees. Well, he does it for your hair, too. It's like basically fertilizing your lawn. There's follicles there. They're not as thick and strong as they used to be. The PR treatment actually makes them thicker, stronger, longer, and they're going to be there, and it's going to work for you over the long haul. From the standpoint of the NeoGraft procedure, I speak from experience on both. I've done both. They work. The fact is, you can see all these sprays and creams and foams that the companies talk about that are just masking the problem of getting your hair back. But from the standpoint of Doc Linville, the NeoGraft procedure is actually getting your hair back. I didn't realize till I had a consultation with Doc and his people, but the fact is you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how bald you go in other areas. So therefore, he takes some of it, he repurposes it. It's basically like resodding your lawn, and in no time at all, you've got hair where you didn't have hair, and it's going to be there for the rest of your life. Check him out today because you listen to us and you're interested in him. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com right now, and you can get a free consultation with Doc and his staff. Ask questions, get answers, have them explain everything to you, and see if it's something that you'd like to do. It's phenomenal. I can't tell you enough good things about him. He's here in the Med Center, but he is going to take care of you every single step of the way. 975hair.com gets you a free consultation with no obligation. Tell him I sent you by.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9. Here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
A texter, 713-780-ESPN, Riverhouse, East River 9, the place to be. A texter saying Pena's defense has been so-so this year. I agree. Would you guys consider moving him to center field next year? I think he would be great. What do you think about that, Blankers?
Say, I lost part of that, Jeremy. Say that, who, center field for who?
Pena.
Oh, God, no. I mean, come on. Jeremy Pena is your shortstop. I mean, look, yes, he's had struggles defensively. He's also been a gold glover. This is a guy that, you know, as much as you and I have had to kind of defend what other people haven't seen, has been an upper fraction of the league to an elite type defender in this league. I'm not worried about him long term. I heard the guys this morning talking about, you know, the potential to move him to third base, too. I don't think we're close to either one of those scenarios, and I'm not worried about him long-term fielding the position at shortstop.
The analytics don't love him. They have him as a below-average shortstop defensively. I don't know if it's – well, quite frankly, it's the range. His range is not very good when it comes to the computers grading it. The arm strength is below average as well. So I don't think that he is a gold glove type of shortstop. I know he won one in his rookie season. I like him at short more than I like him in center because, like, okay, well, who's your short? Are you going to say that it's the rookie that you're going to call up? Okay, that's pretty dang soon. Like, let Matthews come up and then, like, unseat Pena and then move Pena. I have thought about the third base thing, though, because I do think that he plays better defensively at third base with his size, you know, lack of range. You don't need as much rain over at third base. Now, the arm's not great. But Bergman's arm's not great either. So I think you can get by with him at third base. Now, does he hit enough to play third base would be the question that I have. Because usually you get more offense from third baseman than you do shortstops, unless you're talking about the elite shortstops that we currently see in baseball right now. So I wonder about his bat at third base, kind of like I would wonder about his glove at short. And look, he's 26. Like, you're at your best defensively in your early to mid-20s, and then you start to decline. Like, that's the average defensively for Major League Baseball players. So he's not going to get better defensively. This is pretty much who you got. So I think third base would be more of an option, though, than center field, although I know what you're doing, Texter. You're playing to that speed. He does have elite speed.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's where your mind is at.
And you know, it's the natural progression for a lot of guys. You look at Ripken, you look at A-Rod, you look at guys that have done it, and it's not the worst thing in the world to have him, you know, move on and play third base. I think your point is the most valid is he's got to hit like a third baseman. And we know that he gets hot, you know, that he has his moments. But can he hit consistently like a corner infielder is supposed to hit? And then and on the flip side of that, too, or to follow up on that, then who's going to be your everyday shortstop? I don't think Matthews is ready yet to be that kind of guy that's going to step up that big and play shortstop for you. It's easier because you don't have to hit as well, but you need a guy that can play, you know, good defense, and I don't know if they've got anybody that they would earmark to say could replace him at shortstop.
Yeah, I'm not trying to move him off of it. Like, I'm fine with Pena being your shortstop. Like, Matthews would have to unseat him, and then, okay, Pena at third. I am intrigued by what Matthews is becoming. Is his ETA next year? I quite frankly do not know. 713-780-ESPN. Who do you think is the Texans' X factor? Who will define the season for the Texans? Who is that X factor for you, Blankers?
To me, when I think about it, it all starts and ends with C.J. Stroud. I mean, if you want to say the X factor, because everybody knows that that's the obvious one, then to me it would be Joe Mixon, because you know you let Singletary walk away, you went out and made the move to bring in a guy that the three of us have talked about in detail about, you know, just wondering what he's going to be and at this stage in his career and what they did with his contract. I just think, to me, Joe Mixon is going to be an X factor for this team, because if you can add what he's been to at least a majority of a degree with Cincinnati, a pass catcher, a reliable guy, a guy that can get you yards in the backfield, then you're better offensively no matter how good your passing game is. And so I think that's the first guy that I would go to and say, I think if Joe Mixon is anywhere close to what he's been in Cincinnati, then I think that is a massive, massive X factor for the Texans.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways you could go with it, because you're right. Like, C.J. Stroud is the most important Houston Texan, biggest X factor. But if you're going to go from a non-quarterback, there's two on the offensive side, and I lean offense because I think it's more important nowadays to have a top-five offense than it is to have a top-five defense. I think the last 10 Super Bowl champions have proven that, although Kansas City last year was a bit of an outlier. Kansas City's defense was better than their offense last year, but at the same time, they have Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid. So it's hard for me to look at that team and be like, oh, that's a defensive-minded team. I don't fundamentally believe that, even though their defense was better than their offense last year. Mixon and Diggs are on my short list. Diggs, because, look, maybe the Texans are like, oh, we don't need to be a great running team. We think we can win it all without being a great running team. And you can. Like, we did that exercise the other day. Like, you can be a mediocre to even below average running team and still be a Super Bowl champion. Kansas City was last year. Kansas City, I think, was 19th in the NFL in rushing yards, won the Super Bowl. But Mixon does bring your offense to another level. Like, Mixon, if he's good and your running attack is top 10, I think it adds an extra dimension. It adds an extra layer. You can move up a level with your offensive side. But at the same time, what if they're like, okay, we're only going to run it 15 times and we're going to throw it 40 times and they're just picking apart defense after defense, the greatest show on turf? I think you can get by that way too. So I take it two angles. I know I'm hedging here. If you feel like you need the running element, I would go Mixon. If you feel like you can get by running it 15 times a game, I think it's Diggs.
And that's fair. I think that the kind of the honorable mention to me would be a guy like Dalton Schultz, because you know you've got talent at the wide receiver position, but Dalton Schultz, you know, from what he was in Dallas, and yes, he had moments where he stepped up big for you offensively, but I would throw Schultz into the mix too, because if he becomes a guy that can be, like you kind of like you were saying with the running game, like a top 10-ish, top 15-ish tight end, that adds another element, too, to the way the defenses have to play you.
Yeah. Yeah, Schultz to me is like that dude that's going to eat what everybody else isn't eating. Like, he's not going to be the scraps. And, like, I think that the other guys are going to open up some of the underneath stuff for him. But, I mean, if you're looking at Tank, you're looking at Nico, you're looking at Diggs, you're looking at Mixon, Schultz isn't a top four offensive player, like skill guy for you.
Right, right.
Like if you're going specifically the skill guys that Stroud has, I mean, Schultz is fifth.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I just think that, you know, when you could – a lot of people are overlooking him already, but he's still such a capable receiver and a guy that CJ looks to as kind of a security blanket, that if he – shows more signs of the consistency of his Dallas days and can be that guy, I think that adds an extra element that a lot of people aren't really relying on or thinking about that much.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he had a year last year that was very similar to his Dallas days. Like, what he's going to feast on is the defense is not necessarily game planning on him. Like, he's going to be like, if you're facing the Texans defense, if Mixon's doing well, it's like, okay, well, we got to stop the running game. Okay, Stroud's going to be somebody we really have to pay attention to. Nico had a big year last year. You're going to have to focus on him. You're going to have to focus on Tank. You're going to have to focus on Diggs if Diggs is not washed. Like, Schultz is going to be the guy feasting on bad matchups, I think.
Yeah, you're probably right. And I think that, like, you know, what I was kind of alluding to earlier, too, is the defensive coordinator and the defense itself can only focus on so much. he might actually have a better year already just simply because they're going to be so focused on the receiving core and or if the running game is a factor at all. He's probably the forgotten guy that ends up kind of reaping the most benefit out of all that if the offense is successful.
1229, I think, sums it up well. Schultz will get big yards when defenses focus on stopping the receiver or running back. They got to pick their poison. Yeah, I think that's where Blankers was going. I think that's where I was going as well. How about the defensive side? If you had to pick one guy on the defensive side that is the X factor, who would you pick?
To me, that's a difficult question because I think about losing Grenard and then replacing him with Hunter no matter how much you paid for him, and he's still got to perform. But the guy that I lean on because I'm excited about, because I believe in, is Al Shire, because that was one of the guys under the radar that I said I loved the signing. I think he was such an upgrade over what you had, and the X factor there on top of everything else is he's played for D'Amico. He knows the system, so that's a huge kind of extra benefit for having him into the system, to where that's where I would cast my vote. There's so many guys that could kind of qualify. But he's kind of the glue, the green dot, the guy that brings it all together. And because he knows D'Amico and the system, that's an extra added benefit where I think that would be my choice.
I think I would go with Jalen Petrie in this conversation because, I mean, all the questions we had about the secondary going into the offseason, you know, with cornerback depth, with safety depth, because Petrie didn't really have a good sophomore season because Jimmy Ward was hurt a lot. Now Petrie kind of fixes into two of those situations as both a safety in their base 4-3 and a nickel corner. I mean, we love, obviously, Derek Stingley. We were having the conversation a few days ago about if he could be the best corner in the league. I think everyone's high on Kamardie Lassiter. If you were able to add good Jalen Petrie to those two guys, I think the secondary suddenly goes, or maybe not suddenly, but it goes from a secondary with some question marks, with some holes that we feel a little uneasy about, to possibly a strength of the team.
Yeah, I like both of those. I think both of those are, you know, Al Shire. Al Shire was the guy ESPN picked, and I think Al Shire has a lot of pressure while Christian Harris is out too. Like, he's going to have to pick up that position room because he's not going to have a whole lot of help. And then Petrie's going to be that versatile guy that we expect him to be, which would be fun if he can live up to that potential. All right, who's the X factor for you? 713-780-3776, the HRNP listener line, 713-780-3776. Oso says if you can take CJ out of the equation, I think it's Stingley. If he can take another step and stay healthy this whole season, a top-tier corner is going to help a ton against the top quarterback the Texans will play this year. Yeah, all those are good answers. All right, 713-780-3776. Who said it? Everybody's favorite game. Brian reads us quotes that were said by ESPN 97.5 personalities, and then we guess who said it. Comes up next, it's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. As you know, I like to play a little bit on the games. I like to throw a few bones on the games a little bit. And sports bettors, I'm here to tell you about my favorite sports book, and that's BetUS.com, my favorite sports book and my favorite online casino. Football is back, so it's time to get in on the action. I endorse one sports book, one casino. That's BetUS. If you want a game plan to win this season, then check out BetUS. BetUS went large for you this season with a huge offer, a 125% sign-up bonus on your first three deposits. That's right, a 125% bonus on your first three deposits. BetUS offers value other sports books simply do not offer. Gambler's insurance, crypto bonuses, casino bonuses, plus they have all the products you need. Competitive odds, parlays, live betting, odds boost, and prop betting. When you're ready to lay down your bet, give your bet an edge. Why not combine your sign-up bonus with knowledge? Get that knowledge with expert analysis, picks, and predictions on all major sports on their very own BetUS TV. Get started at BetUS.com or give them a call at 1-800-MY-BETUS. BetUS, where the game begins.
It's now time for Super Producer Brian McDonald, a.k.a. TreeMac.
I'm Groot.
To do his best to stump Joel and Jeremy.
Well, I'm stumped.
It's everyone's favorite segment.
Because everyone loves it.
Yeah, everyone loves it.
I know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who said it?
He said it.
With the Killer Bees.
Everybody's favorite segment. Who said it? Brian's going to read to us quotes that were said by ESPN 97.5 personalities. We guess who said those quotes. Brian, why don't you do the honors?
All right, quote number one. A&M should be a real threat this year. I mean, if he really is that dude at quarterback and you have all that talent with the Aggies, I wouldn't be shocked if they make the college football playoffs this year. It really would not surprise me.
Wow. This was this week, right? So Paul's been gone, so it can't be Paul. Right. Imagine you're not using Mapes. Was Delbin out the whole week, too?
Yes.
Yes.
So we got three guys.
This was, I know that the bench was talking about this morning. Everybody knows Joe George is going to the game tomorrow, and he's a Notre Dame fan, so that's been a big topic. I think, I know Lance was high on Elko and the Aggs when I've heard them talking. I think this, and they were both talking about how big the home field matters at Kyle Field. If I was to just preliminarily say, I think it's between Joe and Lance.
Okay. Can you read it again?
Sure. A&M should be a real threat this year. I mean, if he really is that dude at quarterback and you have all the talent with the Aggies, I would be shocked if they make the college football playoffs this year. It really would not surprise me.
Do you think Lance would have mentioned some names?
I think he would, yeah.
So is that enough to sway you to Joe?
Maybe. Did you pick up anything in the cadence or the pauses? Because normally, you know, we talk about that too, the delivery matters.
Yeah.
But I think both of them kind of had that kind of pause staccato thing.
I can see both of them having that little, like, yes, cadence.
So you leaning any specific? You leaning towards Lance?
I'm leaning towards Joe. I think Lance would have given us a name.
Okay, that's fine. We can go with Joe.
Let's do it.
A&M
could
be a real threat.
All right. Starting off
if he really is that dude at quarterback.
He didn't even say the quarterback's name.
He did. Like, he did a different part of the clip, but not. But
it was more the other guys, though. Like, yeah. I think most guys know the quarterbacks' names, but then, the other guys. I think Lance sometimes likes to show off that he knows these college guys because Lance does that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And to Joe's credit, he does know the A&M's quarterback name. He says it earlier in the clip, but I just didn't want to make it too long.
Cool.
But you're right. No, Lance does like to show off his knowledge of the game. All right, quote number two. I'll have to remember that for later tales.
I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah,
keep your information to yourself.
All right, number two. You listen to Joe Buck, the way he used to call games in baseball and football versus the way he did now? Because honestly, what it probably was, you have a bunch of old white dudes who were sitting in a room and they were telling these broadcasters to be as vanilla and as boring as possible. Show no emotion, no excitement.
That sounds like Lance to me.
Yeah, because now, BMAC, technically, Sean Mapes cannot be.
You have a 1-3 guess on all of these.
Okay, a 1-3 in all of them. I think the same way. I thought it was John or Lance right off the jump. You called the last one, got it right. If you want to go Lance, I'm fine with it. I think it's definitely one of those two guys.
Let's go Lance.
Okay.
He listen to Joe Buck.
Oh, he went back-to-back Joes.
Wow.
That's rude.
It's like he'll still get to sleep.
The dream of the 5-0 is dead.
Oh, shut up, Brian.
It's dead. We can still win, though. Probably will. All right, quote number three. You can marry your sister here. Why are we getting arrested in Kentucky? You're in the SEC. You should be able to do this. This is what SEC people do.
Sounds like Colonel.
Gotta be news of the weird, right?
No, I don't think it has to be. I think they could have just been talking about college football and they just went, like, you know, out into the weeds.
Rogue.
Or in the boondocks. That to me sounded like a Granado statement.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what the topic would have been then if that was the case, because I think it would be definitely John or Lance. And I know John's not afraid to speak his mind. I like John. I think it's a news of the weird. But yeah, I can go John.
Let's do it. Granado.
You can marry your sister here. Why?
Bingo.
Why are we getting arrested in Kentucky? You're in the SEC. You should be able to do this. This is what SEC people do.
Yeah, I didn't care if you got that one right. I just wanted to use it. All right.
Was it news of the weird? I didn't hear the music.
It was news of the weird. Yeah, there was apparently someone who got arrested for marrying their cousin, but it was in Kentucky, and so that launched John off into that rant.
He said you should be able to do it.
Yeah, it's the SEC. It's like, what SEC people do.
Right. Based on some of the schools in the SEC and where they're from, yes, he's right.
Yeah, yeah. Clipped out of that was when he said forget about it at the end. But anyway, quote number four makes me sad. I don't cheer. I pray on their downfall. I just don't want to see people do better than me. I'm going to pray on people's downfall from now on. Oh, yeah, Travis Kelce is going to keep playing football. You guys are stupid if you think this isn't his last year.
You're stupid if you think this is his last year?
If this isn't that, yeah, if you don't think this is his last year.
I hear Lance in that.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah, I hear Lance, yeah, in a lot of ways because just from the get-go, the way he was setting it up, and it was, I think it was probably about the new deal that he and his brother signed, $100 million deal for the podcast.
Oh.
And then I think he would, and I think he would be that definitive in terms of having that kind of opinion on a guy like Kelce. I lean Lance.
All right, let's do it. Lance Zierlein.
Makes me sad.
Yeah.
I don't cheer. I pray on their downfall.
We won.
Brian, winner.
I just don't want to see people do better than me.
Chicken dinner. Two in a row, baby.
On people's downfall. Yeah.
The deck was kind of stacked in our favor today.
Yeah, I mean, you had literally a 33%
chance. Let's not worry about details. Yeah. Let's just gloat and bask in the victory.
Oh, well, we'll do that, too, but I believe in fairness and all that stuff. But I will definitely gloat.
Congratulations on being two for the summer. All right, last quote. I, too, peed on under a table at a Florida Gator bar. It happens. The line was too long.
Did you say I, too, did that?
Yes.
I, too, peed on under a table at a Florida Gator bar. It happens. The line was too long.
John Granato.
John? Yeah, that's my guess.
First, yeah, John Granato. No doubt about it, because he's going all over wherever the party is, and I don't think he has any qualms about that stuff. I feel like that's a bold Granato take.
All right, let's do it.
I, too, peed under a table at a Florida Gator bar.
Yeah, it happens.
It happened.
Yeah, you peed.
The line was too long.
Yeah, he stumbled a bit on it. He said he might have had a Coors Light at one point in the show.
We did well.
Yeah, 4 out of 5.
We did really good.
Yeah, 4-1. Good job.
I'll bow down to the greatness that are the Killer Bees and who said it. We're dominating lately. We're doing some really good
work. There's the gloating. We got that out of the way.
Yeah, if you look at the last 14 guys days, you guys are undefeated.
We are. We're like Hunter Brown with how hot we've been since a poor start. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. DJB Anime will be joining us at 5 o'clock. When we come back, Toro Times had an all-timer today. They listed three players that could be traded for the Texans now that the roster cuts have been made. Are you kidding me? This is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
We're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9.
This is the spot you need to be, River House, East River 9. Good way to get your weekend started right. Your first stop after work, after a long week. Enjoy a drink at East River 9 inside the River House, the fantastic food. Well, you can play 9. How about that? Good time to do it. East River 9, River House. Killer Bees broadcasting live. DJB Enemy will be joining us at the River House coming up in 12 minutes. I want to remind you, too, that there's a new way to listen to our radio station. It's clearer. It's stronger. It's the best way to listen. If you have an HD radio in your car, make the switch. Check out 97.9 HD2. That's where we live on the HD2 side of things. So if you start listening on 97.9 HD2, you will never change that radio dial again. All right, so looking through the my morning prep, the 342 websites that I scour through each and every morning. A little bit of an exaggeration there. And Toro Times is one that I'll look at. Toro Times is one that I'll look at time to time, usually at the end of my prep. You know, it's something that might trigger a conversation or trigger, you know, something good. Now, I looked at one today. There was a story, three Houston Texans most likely to be traded now that the 53 has been set, which usually not when you're making trades. Like, usually you're making the trades before the 53 is set. Making trades after the 53 usually doesn't happen. Usually it's okay, we're keeping these guys. Maybe we pick up a couple of guys on waivers and we cut two other guys. But trades usually don't happen after the 53. Usually it's before the 53. So already went into this, I'm like, oh, okay. Let's see who's on there. First one, Dameon Pierce. Okay. Again, you're probably making that trade before you cut down to 53 than after 53. But Pierce isn't the worst name. Like, okay, maybe there's a, you know, a team out there that's running back hungry. The Texans don't love the scheme fit. Okay, Dameon Pierce in a sixth-rounder for a fifth-rounder, or Dameon Pierce in a seventh-rounder for a sixth-rounder, you know, late-round pick swap. So that one's not that bad, right? Like, that one's okay.
Yeah, no, I'm totally fine with that. I think I've seen it on several different websites where they were predicting it or even mentioning it as a possibility. And we talked about the fact that, you know, if it's systematically not a fit, there are teams that run different systems that, quite frankly, could use a young, inexpensive running back that had success in the league.
Yeah, so that one's not what got my attention. That one's fine. The other thing that they listed, one of the backup wide receivers. Again, okay. Like, the Texans, we knew, had a surplus of receivers. But, again, if you're making this trade, you're probably doing it ahead of the 53. That way you can keep, like, Noah Brown, or maybe Noah Brown's the guy that's traded. But that's somewhat feasible. Like, that's not completely out there. You know, if you traded a John Mechie or an Xavier Hutchinson or a Robert Woods, somebody, hey, they had a late injury, or San Francisco didn't get Ayuk done and they wanted to trade for a Robert Woods. Okay, like, that's something that makes a little bit of sense. I would say more Woods than Mechie or Hutchinson, but that one's not way out there. That one's passable.
Yeah, for sure, because we talked about the fact that teams, we had seen that teams were interested in Mechie. We knew that this was the deepest room of position groups of basically anybody they had except for maybe outside defensive linemen and pass rush. But I think that we were contemplating over and over how difficult a choice it might be when you even factor in the Skronics and the guys that had played a role with other teams that were decent and or special teamers too. So, yeah, I think that was definitely a possibility, and I think the receiver room is what a lot of teams in the league were looking at. You see Noah Brown already getting picked up and knew there was talent in the room.
Yeah, so that one's fine. That one's fine. The one that got my attention is the final one. It's actually the middle one on this list, but in terms of, like, you know, teasing you a little bit. Christian Harris. Christian Harris was the final one that was listed here. Considering his inconsistent play and his injured history, coupled with the fact that he's starting the season on the injured reserve, which makes it difficult to trade him, Christian Harris could easily be shopped. This one only happens if Jake Hansen plays well in his stead and if the rest of the linebacking core doesn't look awful while he's out. If guys like To'o can't play better in 24 than he did in 23, then you're not going to move Harris in a trade. You'll just move him to a new position. Now, if Hansen struggles or guys fall apart without him in the lineup, no matter his struggles, he'll get his fair shake. How in the world is Christian Harris a name that you're mentioning that could be traded by the Houston Texans?
For your quote, tell me you don't know ball without telling me you don't know ball, or just tell me you don't watch this team on a consistent enough basis and pay enough attention to realize how good Christian Harris was last year and in the playoffs, how much that they were counting on Christian Harris to be a starting linebacker, to keep taking it to another level because of how good he's gotten. And the fact that with him and El Shaair, everybody felt really comfortable with those two guys. We were questioning the depth that they didn't have and the guys like 2020 and other guys that might have to fill in. But that's because of how good he's become and what he's been able to do. That is absolutely ridiculous. Where'd this come from? Who said this?
Toro Times.
Oh, boy.
Toro
You're
Times
supposed to watch
this.
The team, Toro Times.
Yeah, I mean, he's such a – one, you're not trading him because he's hurt. If you are trading him, you're looking at, like, week five. You're not trading him. Why am I saying if you're trading him? But he's an integral piece of this defense. Like,
yeah.
Even if Henry To'o looks good, he's not going to be better than Christian Harris. Christian Harris, at the end of last season, looked like a top third linebacker in the NFL, like, was really coming on. I think that he struggled a little bit early last year in D'Amico's scheme and system and was playing a little tentatively, and then D'Amico got the best out of him, and he was playing some really good football. Like, I am bullish. I'm not as bullish with the linebackers as I am, you know, Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, but I'm bullish about the idea of Christian Harris and Azeez Al-Shaair playing next to each other in a nickel defense. Like, I can't wait for that. I'm bummed out that Harris is going to be out at minimum four games because he's on the injured reserve list, but I cannot wait until he's back on the field to be lining up next to Al-Shaair. Like, it has never entered my mind to, okay, let's entertain trading him so Henry To'o could be the full-time linebacker in a nickel, and then secondly, if you're playing a little bit of 4-3, both Jake Hansen and Henry To'o would be on the field.
There's just so many things that say this is a ludicrous take simply because of the fact we've seen him improve. We saw, you know, I was super high on him when they drafted him, and I thought this guy really could be something, and then he got off to a slow start, and he's been dinged up. But when he finally started to come on, it's like you don't know where his ceiling is. That's how good this guy can be. You saw it in the playoffs, and then D'Amico, you know, coaching him up and letting him know what was, and he got, you know, he got the pick six. All these different things, and you start realizing, hey, this dude is getting better and better, and there's a possibility that we just don't know how good he can be. Everything is screaming. You're not trading this guy. And because you've already penciled him in as a starter, as you mentioned, now you've got a guy alongside of him that no, we just got to talking about X factors. He knows D'Amico's defense. He's in the right system. He's a tackle maker, and he's a smart player. He's only going to make Harris better, too. It's just such a whacked out take for, you know, for anybody that watches this team.
Yeah, and it still wouldn't be one thing, but it would be one thing if you had some other really good linebackers. You know, if Henry To'oTo'o was somebody who was an equivalent to Christian Harris, if somebody was, you know, if Jake Hansen was an equivalent to Christian Harris or younger or had more promise. But those guys aren't younger. They're not as good. They don't have more of an upside. And Christian Harris is very young, and he's still on his rookie deal that's very, very cheap. Like, the third name there is nuts. And I understand you're trying to, you know, peddle content. You're trying to put stuff out there. And I'm probably doing a favor by bringing it up. That's just a bad name to list as a trade candidate. Put Davis Mills ahead of him. Like, hey, you know, there's a guy, you know, remember when he was traded to Minnesota, that whenever we found out the news about J.J. McCarthy, and then Davis Mills was held out of practice for like the next 3 days because he was nursing a small injury, and people were jumping to conclusions that, oh, he's going to go to Minnesota. Like, that would be a better name to mention. Oh, quarterback, you know, a team that's desperate for a quarterback. They're going to give you a third rounder for Davis Mills. That would make more sense than Christian Harris.
Yeah, no, of course. And I'm going around the roster and just thinking about the position groups going, I mean, could you see a pass rusher? Yeah, but not because of the situation with Autry, but you had some guys that might draw interest. Any of the defensive linemen, you can see that might have some value to other teams. But overall, it's like I'm thinking about they don't have depth at offensive line. You're not moving any of those guys. Running back, no. You're right, Davis Mills could be in that equation. If someone wanted a veteran corner that's, you know, but you haven't seen anything to know that even from a health standpoint, Akuda's got anything left. You could throw something, but it seems like they just threw something on the wall to see if it would stick without really thinking it through.
Yeah. Kyamie Fairbairn makes more sense. John Weeks makes
John
more
Weeks,
sense.
Yeah. Case Keenum before, well, but then he got hurt. So.
Yeah, that's too soon. Alex says he's trying to be an influencer like Branham. That's a good point, Alex. I didn't think about that. He's trying to create a little content, influence the people. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees broadcasting live. River House, East River 9, the perfect spot to start off your weekend. Coming up next, DJ Big Anime covers the Houston Texans for ESPN and ESPN.com. He'll join us to talk about all things Texans. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It is here! It is here. We are 25 hours away from Houston kicking off their football season against UNLV. Your first chance to see Willie Fritz and the Houston Cougars tomorrow night at TDECU Stadium. 6 p.m. start. Cougars hosting the Rebels of UNLV. Head to uhcougars.com/tickets right now. Get those tickets. 713-GO-COUGS. 713-GO-COUGS. Lock in those tickets starting as low as $15. You've been waiting for this all summer. You've been waiting for this all week. We saw games on TV yesterday. Some good games on TV yesterday. College football is back. Come out and enjoy the excitement, the pageantry, the roar of the crowd tomorrow night, 6 p.m. TDECU Stadium as the Houston Cougar football team takes on UNLV. It's the start of a thrilling new era. Coach Willie Fritz leading the charge in his first game as the head coach of Houston hosting UNLV. From the marching band to the tailgates, every heart-pounding play, this is college football at its finest. uhcougars.com/tickets. uhcougars.com/tickets. 713-GO-COUGS. 713-GO-COUGS. Lock in those tickets. See you at the game tomorrow. Come early. Be loud and wear red.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Behind those warm and cozy nights at home, thousands of employees at BP go to work every day. People producing more U.S. natural gas. People building grid-scale solar capacity. People turning landfill waste gas into pipeline-quality renewable natural gas. And people delivering all of that power where it's needed. They're part of almost 300,000 jobs BP supports across the country. Learn more at bp.com/investing in America.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.